Chapter 25. To the railway, if the revolution got the upper hand, perhaps it would have to be abandoned. It would not be the first railway gone to pot in Costaguana. Why, you know, it's one of their so-called national things, he ran on, wrinkling up his nose, as if the word had a suspicious flavor to his profound experience of South American affairs. And, of course, he chatted with animation, it had been such an immense piece of luck for him at his age, to get appointed on the staff, f a big thing like that, don't you know? It would give him the pull over a lot of chaps all through life, he asserted. T therefore down with Montero, Mrs. Gould. His artless grin disappeared slowly before the unanimous gravity of the faces turned upon him from the carriage. Only that LD chap, Don Jose, presenting a motionless, waxy profile, stared straight on as if deaf. Scarf did not know the Avellanos very well. They did not give balls, and Antonia never appeared at a ground floor window, as some other young ladies used to do attended by elder women, to chat with the caballeros on horseback in the calle. The stares of these Creoles did not matter much, but what on earth had come to Mrs. Gould? She said, "Go on, Ignacia," and gave him a slow inclination of the head. He heard a short laugh from that round-faced, Frenchified fellow. He colored up to the eyes, and stared at Giorgio Viola, who had fallen back with the children, hat in hand. "I shall want a horse presently," he said with some asperity to the old man. "Sigh, senor. There are plenty of horses," murmured the Garibaldino, smoothing absently, with his brown hands, the two heads, one dark with bronze glints, the other fair with a coppery ripple, of the two girls by his side. The returning stream of sightseers raised a great dust on the road. Horseman noticed the group. "Oh, to your mother," he said. "They are growing up as I am growing older, and there is nobody," he looked at the young engineer and stopped, as if awakened from a dream, then, folding his arms on his breast, took up his usual position, leaning back in the doorway with an upward glance fastened on the white shoulder of Higuerota far away. In the carriage Martin Decad, shifting his position, as though he could not make himself comfortable, muttered as he swayed towards Antonia, "I suppose you hate me." Then in a loud voice he began to congratulate Don Jose upon all the engineers being convinced Ribierists. The interest of all those foreigners was gratifying. "You have heard this one. He is an enlightened well-wisher. It is pleasant to think that the prosperity of Costaguana is of some use to the world." "He is very young," Mrs. Gould remarked, quietly. "And so very wise for his age," retorted Decad. "But here we have the naked truth from the mouth of that child. You are right, Don Jose. The natural treasures of Costaguana are of importance to the progressive Europe represented by this youth. Just as 300 years ago the wealth of our Spanish fathers was a serious object to the rest of Europe as represented by the bold buccaneers. There is a curse of futility upon our character. Don Quixote and Sancho Panza, chivalry, and materialism, high-sounding sentiments and a supine morality, violent efforts for an idea and a sullen acquiescence in every form of corruption. We convulsed a continent for our independence, only to become the passive prey of a democratic parody, the helpless victims of scoundrels and cutthroats, our institutions a mockery, our laws a farce, a Guzman Bento our master. And we have sunk so low, that when a man like you has awakened our conscience, a stupid barbarian of a Montero, great heavens, a Montero, becomes a deadly danger, and an ignorant, boastful Indio, like Berrios, is our defender." But Don Jose, disregarding the general indictment, as though he had not heard a word of it, took up the defense of Berrios. The man was competent enough for his special task in the plan of campaign. It consisted in an offensive movement, with Cata as base, upon the flank of the revolutionist forces advancing from the south against Sta. Marta, which was covered by another army with the president dictator in its midst. Don Jose became quite animated with a great flow of speech, bending forward anxiously under the steady eyes of his daughter. Decade, as if silenced by so much ardor, did not make a sound. The bells of the city were striking the hour of oration when the carriage rolled under the old gateway facing the harbor like a shapeless monument of leaves and stones. The rumble of wheels under the sonorous arch was traversed by a strange, piercing shriek, and Decade, from his back seat, had a view of the people behind the carriage trudging along the road outside, all turning their heads, in sombreros and rebozos, to look at a locomotive which rolled quickly out of sight behind Giorgio Viola's house, under a white trail of steam that seemed to vanish in the breathless, hysterically prolonged scream of warlike triumph. And it was all like a fleeting vision, the shrieking ghost of a railway engine fleeing across the frame of the archway, behind the startled movement of the people streaming back from a military spectacle with silent footsteps on the dust of the road. It was a material train returning from the Campo to the palisaded yards. The empty cars rolled lightly on the single track. There was no rumble of wheels, no tremor of the ground. The engine driver, running past the Casa Viola with the salute of an uplifted arm, checked his speed smartly before entering the yard. And when the ear-splitting screech of the steam whistle for the brakes had stopped, a series of hard, battering shocks, mingled with the clanking of chain couplings, made a tumult of blows and shaken fetters under the vault of the gate. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.